and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is the Tango to my Cash, the Josie Stronghold to my Steve Stronghold, the Joanna to my Dean Prophet, the Childs to my MacReady, the Patty Brooks to my Herb Brooks, and the Gracie Law to my Jack Burton. It's Megan Hoffmeyer.
Hello. I'm not sure I know all of those references.
It's just Kurt Russell.
The last one I knew.
It's all Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Big Trouble in Little China.
And then you know, Keith David from The Thing. And then you have all of his love interests in his movies. So you're all that.
I mean, I watched the movies.
So. Actually, you're Sylvester Stallone, too. How do you feel about that?
I don't know about that one.
But yeah, so yeah, you're the Tango to my Cash. What do you think?
It's adorable. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Remember that time we were locked in prison together and we had to escape?
Yeah, and they had these awesome clear cells, so I would fog it up and write love notes to you.
And all the people would make fun of me. I'm like, leave me alone.
And then you gave me an apple and a gun and told me not to talk to strangers.
That's a good movie, Lockout. We ever going to do that?
What, get trapped in a space prison?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would go to a space prison.
For you? Yeah.
I mean, not like to... I wouldn't get arrested to go there, but if there was a visit, I'd go.
Yeah, if it was like a tour or something.
Yeah, but this means the prison's been closed for about 30 years. I'm not going to a live space prison.
I mean, I don't think I'd want to go to a creepy abandoned space prison. I'd rather go to one that was live. At least you'd have guards to protect you.
It's become a tourist attraction. So there's staff and there's janitors and there's
kind of like Alcatraz.
Yeah, it's like Alcatraz, but in space.
There's
tour guides, there's nosy tourists.
You get the little audio thing you have to walk around with. They still haven't figured it out that far in the future. You still have to carry that thing around your neck with the little buttons. It doesn't always work.
And if you don't want the tour, you just buy that. Or you could be the people that just run through it real fast. But if you're going to space, I wouldn't run through space Alcatraz quickly. I would savor it, you know, because I don't want to go back quickly to Earth. It's probably expensive.
I'm sure it'd be very expensive. I mean, just the ride alone.
You think the people from Crazy Rich Asians could fund this?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they've got more money than all of the astronauts out there. But you know what's making me really sad about this whole thing? The fact that they haven't figured out tours still in all this time.
It's just people are a pain in the butt. You gotta herd cats.
Just the technology part of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get there. I think that's the plot for Social Network 2.
Lockout 4.
Put people in lines.
Lockdown 4.
I had to deal with lines for 6 years. People don't like lines.
Oh, no.
And they don't go where they're supposed to.
It's really a joke. I mean, we were at a convention recently, and they put some lines on the ground, and people were just walking straight across the line.
Just let anarchy happen.
See, it worked. We got into the hall.
I mean, let people figure it out. So when we open our space prison, it's just... whoever gets there, gets there.
It's all glass walls, so it'll be like people at the Apple office and people just walk right into them because they don't know that there's walls there. It would be actually more entertaining that way.
I'd take bets. Do you know how many people stare at their cell phones?
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be walking into glass windows everywhere. I like it. All right, so we have a big podcast this week, Megan. Big. Last time we did...
How big?
Really big. Crazy big.
Crazy rich big?
Yeah, I mean, I got to set it up. You got to allow me to set this up. You know, here we go again, because the last time we podcasted was when we did Free Fire, a movie about people murdering each other in an abandoned warehouse, which is amazing. You should listen to it. But this week, we're going to talk about the fantastic, I'm not using hyperbole, the fantastic romantic comedies or the romantic dramas of 2018 so far. This is a good year. This isn't me watching a movie and going, romantic comedies are changed forever.
No, it's surprisingly good. I think that's why... I was so excited to do this with you because there have been so many really fun, funny, just enjoyable romantic comedies this year.
And we were flip-flopping. We were wondering if we should just cover Netflix because they have a bunch of their stuff. They have Set It Up. They have To All the Boys I've Loved Before. They have the Guernsey, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, that movie. And then they have The Kissing Booth, which we have about 30 minutes left. And then that one movie with the kid from Workaholics.
I'm always surprised when I log into Netflix and I just see more movies. And they all have, I mean, they're like last year, this year, and you're just looking at them going, where did you come from?
You know what they said? The guy on Netflix said, we don't really like to promote these movies heavily. We like for people to find them and then they feel like it's theirs. So you know how people love cult classics that got a VHS passed around?
That makes sense.
They're doing the same thing with Netflix, those jerks.
This person is like a genius.
Yeah, and so when you find it, you're like, what is this movie? Set it up? I've never heard of this. This is my favorite movie, and I found it. But 10 million other people have found it.
Well, it is interesting, though, because they do promote some of the movies. I get emails with this week on Netflix was just released. But some of them just kind of pop up there.
Well, with Altered Carbon, that was everywhere, but that cost $100 million.
Altered Carbon was excellent.
I got a box from Amazon.
Favorite rom-com TV show of the year.
Interesting. I got a box from Amazon with Jack Ryan on it.
Oh, yeah. I know. I saw that on the counter.
So, I mean, I guess you have to advertise your $100 million shows.
Oh, Jack Ryan is everywhere. I think I pulled up Instagram earlier, and there were Jack Ryan ads.
Yeah, I mean, he came to the door and said, hey, watch our show.
Yeah, and shook our hand.
And I was like, I'd rather watch A Quiet Place again. He was like, yeah, but, try this out. And then Krasinski walked away. Gave him some water. He looked, it's hot here in Georgia. He's going door to door.
I mean, maybe if Emily Blunt was in it, I'd be more excited.
Yeah, if she was in Jack Ryan?
No, yeah, would be much more romantic.
Interesting. She'd be Jack Ryan.
That would be awesome.
And not Jackie Ryan. She'd be Jack Ryan.
No, she'd be Jack. I mean, it's cool to have, androgynous names now.
Yeah, and so, I mean, she would just get everything done, be home for dinner at 5 o'clock like Harrison Ford's Jack Ryan.
She would be amazing, and I would buy it, too.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I can see her doing it.
Season 2 of Jack Ryan, Emily Blunt.
Recast.
And then Krasinski takes over the Mary Poppins role.
No, thanks.
All right, so we're going to talk about today, Set It Up, the fantastic rom-com on Netflix. Then we're going to transition into To All the Boys I've Loved Before, the other fantastic romantic comedy drama that's on Netflix. Then I'm going to jump into Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, which is a blast of pure joy. And if you scoffed when I said that, you need to watch the movie and smile, because I was sitting in the theater just with the biggest, dumbest smile on my face, and we've been listening to the soundtrack for 2 weeks. I listened to the soundtrack so much that when I stopped listening to it, songs I was annoyed of 2 weeks earlier are cool now.
I almost broke out into song when you said Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, because I've been listening to the soundtrack so much.
And then we're going to do Crazy Rich Asians, which is actually Mamma Mia and Crazy Rich Asians are huge successes. Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again has made over $350 million, and Crazy Rich Asians is at $150 million on a $30 million budget. Which is insane if you watch this movie and the locations they shot at, that they kept it to $30 million. There must have been a ton of tax breaks. But these four movies are very good. And they're very fun. And I hope they bring back the romantic. I mean, you know I love romantic comedies. When you and I first started dating back in, this is probably 2010. I was obsessed with Serendipity. So I never hid my love of romantic comedies from you.
I don't mind them. I mean, romantic comedies to me have always kind of been like the holiday movies on Hallmark and Lifetime. They're entertainment for the background. There's nothing particularly bad or good about them. They're just entertainment.
I think for a while, we had some really good ones. There's like, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan had a great duo. They worked together great.
Excellent Christmas movie.
And then you... Well, no, and then, you had Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, When Harry Met Sally. Some very good ones went through, but then they kind of became more about just really mediocre. I like Matthew McConaughey, but it was like the McConaughey, Kate Hudson, McConaughey, Jennifer Garner, Mark Ruffalo, Reese Witherspoon, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Hugh Grant.
Oh, and then there were the teen ones, and they were just churning them out. And I think that was part of the problem. They were just taking every popular actress at the time and just shoving her into some, marketing or PR or nurse role, and she needed to find a man.
Yeah, and like Katherine Heigl's Ugly Truth, she met the rakish Gerard Butler. And Knocked Up, she met Seth Rogen. And then she did some other ones, too, that I don't remember. But they were big hits. And I don't know. They just got kind of... I kind of like the Katherine Heigl ones. I don't care. And then Bounty Hunter came out with the rakish Jared Butler. But these...
I got a little bit jaded along the way, I would say. And I think that's kind of what turned me off, why these are so surprising.
There aren't any rakish people in this.
No, you said it before. What I love about all four of these movies is that they made me happy. And I personally like movies that, I mean, there's a place for every type of movie, but if it's a romantic comedy, I just want to be happy. I don't want to be worried about some peril that their relationship is in. I just want to smile and enjoy myself. And that's what is so great about these. They're just nice movies.
And we're going to go into spoiler territory for these four movies. So just giving you a warning. But I mean, if you've seen a rom-com, you know they end up together at the end. So, we're not spoiling much. But I think you're right. There are some very big tropes in these movies. Well, actually, let's jump in to set it up. We'll start with that. The very good movie directed by Claire Scanlon, who has directed episodes of Kimmy Schmidt, New Girl. Basically, every TV show that's a good comedy on TV, she has directed. And she actually started off as an editor. So I think in this movie, she actually wanted to keep it to 90 minutes. But she kind of made it, it's 1 hour and 45. But she is a very experienced comedy director. And she started off as an editor, which I think is really cool. I wrote down her name. Yeah, she was an editor on The Office. And then she directed Last Man on Earth, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Glow, Fresh Off the Boat, Mini Project. She has directed really good things. So she has a great beat. I think because of TV, she knew how to move very quickly. I mean, this thing started shooting. She was 7.5 months when this movie started. 7.5 months pregnant when this movie started shooting. And it finished right before she gave birth.
That's impressive.
Second child.
You go, girl.
So they shot this movie in 6 weeks in New York on pretty big locations.
Yeah.
And then you take out the weekends. She shot this movie in probably 20, 30 days.
I say yes very enthusiastically because I follow Glenn Powell on Instagram, and he would post to the videos of him bringing his grandma to set, and then funny little things with him and Zoe Deutsch, because I believe that they're friends outside of this, and it was just enjoyable to watch because he has so much energy and he's so funny. So yes, I remember that it filmed very quickly in New York because he'd be posting all these videos.
Yeah, 6 weeks this movie took, but this doesn't feel like a 6 week movie. This feels like a legit...
Studio, like a big movie.
3 month movie. And also the woman who wrote it is Katie Silberman. She is a producer. She produced How to Be Single. We watched that on an airplane, didn't we?
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, I didn't mind that.
She also did some other, she produced Hot Pursuit with Reese Witherspoon.
It had Alison Brie on it. That's why I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good.
She had that very honest Spanx moment that just, it spoke to me.
And Mandzukas is in it. You love Mandzukas. All right, so. I like Mandzukas. All right, so you have a very experienced TV director. You have a good writer who's been producing for a while. And you want to know something cool about this? So we're going to kind of ask 5 questions about each movie as we go through. But I got a couple bombshells to drop for you. You want to hear something neat?
Go for it. I've been waiting. You've been holding back for me.
Yeah, well, that one was pretty cool about the 7.5 months pregnant when she shot it.
And that's neat.
They're like, was it miserable? And she's like, no, it was fine. Not a good cast.
I mean, you wouldn't know. It's not like the movie suffered for it. And the really cool thing about this movie is that it feels like a true... It's a complete story. I didn't notice gaps in it. There were very funny, real moments for the characters that I liked a lot.
And somehow... all right, so get this. Zoe Deutsch plays a character called Harper. And Glenn Powell plays a guy named Charlie. They're two assistants. He's 28. I think she's 26. They work for Lucy Liu, who's this baller writer. You know, she's
sports
like a woman in a man's world, not taking their crap. But because of that, everyone's like, oh, she's mean, you know. But she's actually just really talented and a good writer.
She's a hard ass.
Yeah, there we go. And then you have Taye Diggs playing a guy named Rick, who's just a jerk. But I love Taye Diggs.
It just sounds like such a dismissive name, Rick.
Taye Diggs needs to be
in
more movies.
Sorry to all the Ricks of
the world. His performance in Malibu's Most Wanted is vastly underrated. But the neat thing about this movie is, when you watch the first scene, when it's Harper and Charlie, but if I jump back between Harper, Charlie, Zoe, Glenn, I apologize. The first time, the scene that they have, their chemistry was so good that Claire was like, I can't have their chemistry be so good immediately because it just can't work that way. So when you watch the scene, she had them purposely not look at each other. So the first time they meet...
Oh, the food elevator.
Yeah, the
thing?
First time she meet, of course the bosses say we don't want food, but then they go, oh, we want food. So it leaves the two of them scrambling. She orders food, but she has no money to pay for it. This leaves Charlie to zoom in and be like, hey, I'll buy that. So he buys the meal. They end up splitting the burger and the salad.
Macaroni, I think.
Yeah, macaroni. They end up taking the macaroni, making a truffle mac, truffle cheeseburger. It's a funny scene, but when you watch it...
And he takes the pickle.
Yeah, he steals the pickle for his dinner, even though he says he's going to give it with the burger, which is horrible. But they're so good together that she had them not do eye contact. She's like, all you need to focus... You can't look at each other. You just have to focus on the food. You're in desperation mode, so you don't even notice each other. And then the next couple times that they meet each other, she does like drive-bys or when they're walking and talking. So they don't really have time to be together to kind of notice that, hey, we're both really good looking people and we're obviously compatible and we have great chemistry. They don't give them time to notice that.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think I notice those things on a daily basis either.
But I kind of like, though, that she made the very smart and conscious decision to take these two who have such great chemistry. They're in Everybody Wants Some, but they weren't together. You should watch Everybody Wants Some. And she just made a couple of very smart directing moves to kind of keep the chemistry a little far apart because they're so good together.
So back to the stuff that's shared on social media, the little videos that each of them would put up of them just being goofy together on set, you can tell that they've got very good chemistry. They're good friends and they're just, I don't know. I think that Glenn Powell could probably have chemistry with a tree.
Yeah. He and Imogen Poots need to do a movie because she has chemistry with everything.
Oh my gosh. My mind would explode.
They'd be too good together.
They would be way too good.
All right, so I guess one way to kind of talk about each movie that we have here and kind of, you know, not get lost in talking about all them, we have 5 questions for each. So the first one is, what makes it a unique take on the rom-com formula? And so for me, this movie knows the tropes. I was reading an article. It was very haterish. I'm like, you're horrible. But it's like 20 times that Set It Up rips off the great romantic comedies. And they're all true. But this was made by... So the director, she loved His Girl Friday. And there's a cool story about this. I know I'm busting in a lot of different stories. But so the actress in that movie, what is it? Rosalind Russell. She was in His Girl Friday. She saw the script and she's like, I hate this script. So every night she would punch up the script, say her lines, and add extra lines. And this made Cary Grant mad, so he had his script punched up. So when they were going at each other in that movie, they had punched up scripts and they were bringing their A game because both of them were bringing their A game.
Hmm.
So she was like, you need to watch this. They watched that movie. They were really good together. So this is, you know, Claire straight up said, I love romantic comedies. I love the genre. I love what it was. So she took a lot of the tropes that are in these things, but made them all fresh and made them all... You know what's interesting? I mean, every action movie, every Marvel movie, they all almost follow the same pattern. So this one just takes the patterns and does a great thing with it. Like every football game, people play football. So I think it's lazy to say it copies all the tropes, but it does. But it does it in a loving, creative, inventive, and smart way.
You stole my line. It is lazy. And you and I have had this conversation multiple times about most genre films. When critics complain that it's stealing from other movies, it's doing XYZ, it's borrowing from this, they're genre movies. It's called the genre for a reason. It's got an established set of things that people are expecting from those movies. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but you can make it good.
Yeah. And this isn't lazy that they're doing it.
No, there's nothing lazy about this at all. And I guess if I had to answer this question, I would say that it felt relevant. A lot of times, especially in the early 2000s, the rom-coms that were out then, I didn't identify with those people. Yes, I was younger, but they didn't have realistic jobs. Or they had, you know, she meets the really rich guy and she's in love with him. He brings her to this whole
Made in Manhattan.
Well, other ones, I mean, there were a lot of movies that were like this.
Or just, like Fool's Gold.
Yeah, Fool's Gold, or what was the Failure to Launch, any of those movies. Or the Kate Hudson, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. They all have these like big, fancy jobs. And the reality is, though we are at the upper side of millennial, the very, very upper side.
I'm the oldest millennial you can get.
Sorry. Though we're at the upper end of that, they didn't have realistic jobs for that time of the... For that time period, they had these crazy fancy jobs. And honestly, when we were getting jobs, you took low-level jobs and you had to work your way up through experience. And that's what these kids are doing in this movie. That's why it feels relevant. They've got these low-paying underling or beginner's jobs where they're trying to learn their industry and work their way up the ladder, which I think is completely fair and reflective. And then they're also making fun decisions that are... you know, cheap decisions, because it's kind of the way we all lived. You took that low-paying job and you had to scrounge. And they're in New York. If you know anyone who lives in New York, it's not the cheapest place to live. So you end up having roommates or having a second job just to support your normal spending habits.
Yep. And they have some good roommates in this movie.
Hilarious roommates.
You had, Duncan, Pete Davidson, who loves Good Time. Instead of promoting this movie on a talk show, he promoted Good Time, so I like that. And then you had Becca, played by Meredith Hagner, who's stupid likable.
I just enjoy her so much. She was in, and I don't remember the name of it, one of the Christmas movies. It was something like The 12 Days of Christmas, where she got a different present every day. It's adorable. She's such a... She makes bad decisions in it, and she's completely oblivious to things that are going around her, but at the same time, you still like her, which is not always easy to pull off.
Yeah, she's crazy likable in this. She has a couple good lines, too.
She's adorable. She's funny. Please be in more movies.
All right, the next one is, what makes it great? And something I thought was pretty interesting is the Lucy Liu's character, Kirsten, you know, she's supposed to be this kind of like mean kind of woman, but if you think about it, what the director said is that she knows, so Lucy Liu's character, Kirsten, knows that Harper, Zoe Deutsch, wants to write, but Harper gives up really quickly, so why should Kirsten help someone who doesn't want to help herself? I thought that was cool. And at the end, she's like, what do you got? But, you know, those years of working, that she worked there and never pitched anything. So she probably just was like, okay, she's not going to do this, so I want to help her, but she's not doing anything. So I'm just going to continue to use her, you know, to keep my office set. That was a wise decision. It just shows how well this movie's thought out.
Well, I like what Kristen said to her at the end, where she says, if I am so tough on you that I'm the toughest person you meet in this horrible industry, then I've prepared you.
Yeah.
And that's a really kind thing for a mentor to do.
Yeah, it was gangster. Tell me something new. All right, cool. What does it make it great for you? What makes it great?
I'm going to borrow from my last answer. I think it's just that it feels real. I mean, it feels like the world that I live in.
Right. Best moment? So, you know that Decider claims that the pizza scene's an all-time rom-com classic scene? Where, this is going to get us our PG-13, I can drop one F-bomb. But Glenn Powell says he wants to fuck the pizza. And then she's like, I get it. And that's a good scene. But this is a weird movie, too. There's some weird characters in this film. You got Creepy Tim, who's in the elevator.
That's really, yeah.
So there's a scene in an elevator where they lock Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs in an elevator. Because they talk to the maintenance guy, Creepy Tim, played by Titus Burgess. He's creepy. And then, but he doesn't know his name's Creepy Tim. When he learns it's Creepy Tim, he's like, I like it. So they trap him in an elevator, but a UPS guy gets in there. And the UPS guy just starts taking off his shirt. He said, this is how it's going to end. And he starts peeing into his packages. Like, he just starts peeing in an elevator. And it's a scene that shouldn't work. You have people trapped in there. You have a very creepy elevator operator. Then you have a very scared UPS man peeing in an elevator. But it works, and it's fun. And I think that's kind of like the movie in a nutshell, is it can make peeing in an elevator funny. Because I couldn't write peeing in an elevator being funny. Could you write a scene like that?
No.
Megan, make peeing in an elevator funny. They made peeing in an elevator funny. So that's my favorite moment.
I'm just getting grossed out thinking about it. I always kind of look away when we rewatch it. Like, I'm busy in the kitchen doing something else. I don't want to watch this scene again because I'm uncomfortable. Best moment. Oh, goodness. Can I pick several?
Sure.
No, I won't do that. I think my favorite moment is right before the pizza scene when Zoe and Glenn are getting along so well at the wedding,
the engagement party,
yeah, for best friend. Becca. And they're having such a good time, and she's buzzed, and she's getting drunk, and the two of them want to get pizza. And this to me is an all-time best friend moment that I think that it's more like real people than normal rom-coms would be. She says, you know, this party doesn't have pizza and I need pizza. So she grabs Glenn Powell and they go to leave and she tells Becca that she's going to go get pizza. And Becca's like, go ahead. Go have fun. I love you. Goodbye. I'll see you later. And 2 seconds after they leave, Becca had already ordered tons of boxes of pizza for the whole party. I mean, that's such an awesome moment to me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is a good friend, right? And I loved how in the background, how Becca's fiance and Glenn had already devised a handshake that involves a slap, a kick. Like, it's a very intricate handshake.
It's elaborate.
They developed it throughout an engagement party.
And it goes on through, like, two cutaways,
yeah,
too.
While they're talking, they're still doing the handshake. That's a good scene. Yeah, I love that. I love that little moment. Who's your favorite character in this movie?
Oh, goodness. Probably the roommate for Glenn Powell.
Oh, you liked Duncan?
Yeah, he's funny. I mean, he's just... And this will be my favorite thing that he does after, spoilers, after Glenn gets fired by Rick. Rick comes begging
for... No, he quits. Because he's like, I quit. And then Rick's like, you're fired. And he's like, I just quit.
So after that, he comes to Glenn's apartment because he needs some information on his ex-wife. And he's just desperate. And the roommate shows up and goes, you still work for this guy? And he goes, no. And he throws his iced coffee all over Rick, which is just such another fantastic friend move.
Yeah, he's like, there's soy in that.
And then him hooking up with all the guys and the music he's playing. Yeah. And just.
So if he's playing Third Eye Blind, Glenn knows that he's hooking up with somebody.
His banter with Zoe was very funny. The first time they met, they were like, I think we're best friends.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Because remember the going to the party, he's like, I'm a plus one. He's like, well, you can be my plus one. He's like, well, I already have a... So you're the plus two. We're at a plus three right now. It's a good... It's a very well-written movie.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I love it.
It's too good.
The dialogue's great.
All right, so the next one is, what's the best food moment? Now, we've talked about the pizza. You know, she had them... They too... You know, Zoe barfed that night because she was like, I'm going to eat the pizza. She's like, no, spit it out. Claire's like, spit it out. So they're both really sick because they ate a ton of pizza that night. And so Zoe barfed. So during that scene, they're very full and uncomfortable. But there's me. Just type in set it up pizza scene. And you will look at the way Glenn looks at her. Like, you're like, this dude loves her. Like, they're just good actors. But there's very good acting. He's talking about wanting to have sex with the pizza. The pizza doesn't even look that great. But they're just eating pizza. But, yeah. I don't know. I think my favorite food scene, though, is when there's a scene where Zoe's writing. And she... Oh, no. I took your scene. You do it. You do it. Go.
So my favorite scene was not with the pizza. Food. It was the scene with the chips when...
The chips?
When Zoe goes to her local... I guess it's a Mexican
restaurant. Oh, yeah.
She goes there frequently, clearly, as is indicated by the waiter. And she's doing... Again, back to the real choices thing. I know that I have friends who would pull this kind of stuff. They would show up at a restaurant. They'd have some free water and free chips and then dip out, you know, get that, oh, I got a phone call or whatnot.
That's but evil.
When she's finally writing her story, she sits there and she's so excited and she places herself at the bar and writes the entire story. Eats all these chips, has all this water. She's so excited. She's finished. She runs out. She says she's going to give the waiter the biggest tip of his life. And then she realizes she doesn't have her wallet. And he tells her to never come back.
Yeah. You know, I thought you were going to say the scene where she's writing and she has the popcorn pouch right in front of her mouth. So all she has to do is like stick her head down.
Was that when she had the blanket over her head?
Yeah. And all she has to do is put her head down and there's a whole popcorn pouch right in front of her face.
That's so gross.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, that's nasty.
And also, there's another funny scene at Yankee Stadium where they try to get Tay and Lucy on the kiss cam, and they won't kiss, but they keep doing it on them three times. It's really funny.
We keep talking about the pizza scene and the thing where Glenn Powell wants to make love to the pizza, but I really think the funniest part of that is when they're trying to climb the ladder, and she gets all upset because she doesn't want him to tip the box so the cheese doesn't move. That speaks to me so deeply because I love food.
And then she's like, I can carry it. He's like, your hands are too small. And he snags it from her. I thought that was good. All right. We could probably talk about this movie for another hour, but we got to move on. This is a packed episode. We just got to do it. We're going to move on to All the Boys I've Loved Before. Now,
I'm so excited.
This movie is really good.
Yes.
And I want to... So this movie is directed by Susan Johnson. It's written by Sophia Alvarez, and it's based on a book by Jenny Han. And I got to tell you, I've been doing some research on it, and one thing that I really loved is when we were watching it, I was like, there's a color palette to this movie. It was blue and yellow and green or red. But mostly blue and yellow.
Mostly blue. But it's almost a teal color, kind of like the blue that you see in the Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah, you're right. I would say a teal. And
it's like a greenish blue.
So, and then I was also watching the cinematography, and I'm like, these shots centered. One shot.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, because I kept... Mark, shut up. But when I was watching this movie was shot in 21 days. And The director, she's like, for this movie, we did sit down and come up with a color palette that was very specific. We came up with a framing that was very specific. Just ways that we thought we could elevate a teen comedy that would maybe bring in an audience that wasn't thinking that this movie wasn't set for them. I think we've achieved that. Part of the reason different ages are responding is because it looks like a movie that is multiple times the budget. It looks glossy and pretty and helps us tell the story. And I really like that. And I looked up the people who worked on this. And the production designer is a guy named Paul Joyal. He did a movie called Before I Fall. And he's done tons of TV movies. He's done like the romances that we're like the Hallmark movies that we're talking before. So he knows how to work on a budget. And the cinematographer is Michael Fiminari. He works with the director Mike Flanagan. He's done Gerald's Game, Before I Fall, Zoidoich, Oculus, and Ouija. So he's a cinematographer from horror movies. A horror movie cinematographer shot this film. But if you look at Gerald's Game, that's very centered as well. So, and you watch Ouija, when I was thinking about the shots, then that's very centered. So they brought in a guy that just knew how to shoot on a budget, because Oculus is dirt cheap. Mm-hmm. Gerald's Game is dirt cheap.
A lot of horror movies are cheap, aren't they?
Yeah. And
you get a lot of experience because they film so many.
Exactly. That's a great point. And so they bring in a production designer that's worked on hundreds of Hallmark movies. Then you bring in a guy that's worked on tons of horror movies. And together, they were able to achieve a very glossy, well-shot... I mean, did it get too distract? Like, was I just saying it too much? There's a very interesting color palette to it. It's a good-looking movie.
Well, you noticed it the second time we watched the movie. So I think that's to its credit. The first time we really loved it. It looked good. But the second time, you're able to pick up on stuff that you're not paying attention to the first time because you're listening to the story and the dialogue. So... I think that's fair.
And the dialogue in this movie is great. This movie...
It's so fun.
This movie was an absolute surprise for me. I mean, it's a movie about nice little teenagers falling in love, but it's really well written.
Yeah, the dad, John Corbett, he's an aware and involved dad. He's a lot of fun. I know that you get a little bit annoyed with the little sister Kitty because you think that her dialogue is a bit ahead of her time, but it's funny. It's very enjoyable. I mean, at that point, you just have to... call movie magic and write it off. But she's funny.
So the plot of this movie, to all the boys I've loved before, is you have a character named Laura Jean, played by Lana Condor, incredibly likable actress. She is kind of opening narration, talking about how she's fallen in love before and everything. And one of her former best friend, played by Israel Broussard, his name is Josh, he was in Happy Death Day. Listen to that podcast. It's good. Actually, watch the movie. It's really good. So her best friend starts dating her older sister, Margot. Her older sister, Margot, graduates high school, moves to Scotland. I think she's going to St. Andrews. So I'm guessing.
Maybe.
They never say, but that's my bet. So he's going to St. Andrews.
Wouldn't be a bad place to go to school.
She breaks up with Josh, and then it just leaves. Margot moves away, and it leaves Kitty, like a 12-year-old, and then it leaves Laura, and then with their dad, but he seems to work a lot. He's a doctor.
He's a gynecologist.
Yeah, interesting. They call him out for that. So, you know, it's just her, the two of them hanging out. She doesn't talk to Josh anymore because he started dating her sister. When the little Kitty finds these five letters.
Aww.
And these are five letters that...
You said little Kitty.
Little Kitty. That Laura Jean... wrote to, like, these loves that she's had. She never wants to see him. She maybe hung out with these people once, but she loved them, and she writes these passionate letters.
So she can figure out her feelings, process them, and move on.
Ooh. You said that way better than I ever could have.
Well, that's what she said in the movie.
You pay much better attention than I do. All right. I'm noticing the lights and everything. You're noticing the dialogue. So one thing you'll learn, we're watching this show called The Expanse, and while I'm paying attention to all the production design and everything, I'm like, Megan, what's going on? And then you break it down for me. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I just want to let everyone know. All right, so Kitty sends out these five letters. And what I love most is when these letters get sent out, in a lesser comedy, this would have caused absolute crap. This would have been the worst thing ever for
a girl. It would typically inspire meanness in other characters, is what I would call it.
People would learn. They would be jerks.
They would become petty. They would ridicule her for it. But everyone's just cool. And accepting of it in some kind of way.
Everyone who gets letters is cool about it. Which is really random.
And they confront her very nicely, too. I mean, they just kind of approach her and discuss it. They don't cause a scene or try to make fun of her or, you know, put something horrible on her locker.
Yeah, and that never happens. Well, maybe at the end.
That's different, though.
But yeah, so what happens is the letter goes out to Josh, who was dating her sister, Margot. She'll never date Josh because that's just a thing she said, but she never explains it to him because she's a 16-year-old kid and they do kid things. But the surprise of this movie is Peter, played by Noah Centineo, who's Megan. Apparently, he's the internet's new boyfriend.
Oh, is he now?
So while researching this movie...
How old is he?
I don't know. So I'm researching this movie. I'm looking at E.T. But every, like...
Tiger Beat.
Yeah, they're all, like...
JT.
There's so many lists about this kid. I'm like, man, I am old. Because I didn't know all these kids. These kids are, like, in love with this actor.
I'm glad I haven't Googled this movie too much, because I feel like that would fill my Google news feed. Right now, I'm still getting all the Crazy Rich Asians updates.
Yeah, so she sends a letter to Peter, but he's dating the jerky blonde girl.
The popular girl.
Yeah, the popular girl. However, they break up, and so Peter... But Laura Jean doesn't want to deal with Josh. She doesn't want to explain to him the letter, so she pretends that she's dating Peter. So she and Peter meet up, and they lay base rules for a fake relationship so she doesn't have to deal with Josh, and that Peter's ex-girlfriend will come back to him because he has a current girlfriend.
So they can make the ex-girlfriend jealous, and so that Laura Jean can avoid Peter.
Yeah, so, you know, he has to write her notes every day. She has to go to all his games. But the crazy thing is in any other movie, she would end up, Peter would be the jerk, right? Josh.
The popular guy.
Yeah, the popular guy would be the jerk. Josh comes in and saves her. At the very end, Josh and her realize their love for each other and they get together.
Isn't that the plot of several other teen movies?
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't happen in this movie. This kid, Peter, turns out to be the nicest kid. I hated it.
No, he's funny and he's charming and he does this great spin move where she establishes one of the rules is no kissing, and he'll kiss her on the forehead and kind of put his hand in her pocket and spin her. It's all just too cute. And at the end of the night, after watching this movie, I was just happy. I mean, again, all these movies, common themes, you're just smiling and laughing, and it's just enjoyable.
There's a lock screen picture of the two of them sleeping that apparently they were really cuddling together, and the internet's going crazy over it.
Of course.
These kids are loving it. I feel weird reading it. I'm a 36-year-old dude researching a movie, and all these kids are like, oh my gosh, a lock screen. But what makes this a unique take on the rom-com formula? Now, should we start off by saying that, what makes a unique take?
That's a good question. Probably the fact that there's just no real peril involved. There's a little bit of reputation drama, but you never feel like she's going to completely lose face at school, or people are just being super mean to her. The popular girl is kind of a jerk, but obviously, they don't ever focus on her, which is nice. That would be the focus of a lot of other movies. The mean girl, or just someone with a real vendetta that's completely unrealistic. I'm sorry. I didn't have that high school experience. I didn't know people who were just so mean that all they did was sit in their bedroom at night and plot ways to destroy the nerdy girl at school.
Yeah.
And I've never liked that about movies, when you feel so uncomfortable because there's just the most awkward situation that you didn't feel like was realistic.
Never has that.
So no one's truly mean in this movie. Yeah, the popular girl, she's a turd, and she's a jealous little monster, but I think everybody's kind of better. But
that kid kind of, Peter kind of keeps going back to her.
Yes, definitely.
So he's at fault, too.
Yeah, and I mean, there are very obvious moments when Laura Jean and Peter are saying things to each other that they don't truly mean because they're trying to cover up their own feelings.
Yeah, I guess they're 16 and 17, so it makes it a little bit better. I was kind of complaining, and then I was like, wait, they're kids. I'm cool. But I guess what makes this a unique take in the rom-com for me is how well thought out it is. I really like the steps the director made. I thought, she's awesome. She was like, I had this great script, so I just basically couldn't mess it up. She's like, I just didn't want to mess up this script. I had a great script, so all I had to do was direct it decently. And I thought that was cool. She realized what she had. She didn't put her ego in the way, and she made steps to maximize her budget and shoot a really good 21-day movie. I guess we kind of talked about the what makes it great. What's your favorite moment?
Ooh, my favorite moment. That's tough. There's just so many cute scenes. I mean, I know you find Kitty too precocious, but all of her little comments are so on the nose. I think one of my favorite scenes is a really awkward one between Kitty and her dad when she blames Laura Jean's moods on having her period. And then dad just launches into this scientific description of it's natural and this is the way it is. And the little girl sarcastically calls it her moon phase or something.
Yeah.
It's just really, their banter was just so funny.
It was,
And John Corbett's comfort level with these girls in this movie is just great. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I loved him in Sex and the City, but.
Oh, man. Best moment. I guess when the letters go out. So she meets up with Lucas, who Lucas actually follows her into the bathroom. He's like, hey, I got this letter. You can have it back. Like, people shouldn't see this, which I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter comes up to her. He's like, hey, I got this letter. I appreciate it, but like, I'm kind of with somebody. So here's the letter back. And then Josh comes up. He's like, what is it? You know, like, what's this letter? But then she smooches Peter and that kicks everything off. But I just, like I said before, I thought it was really refreshing how they dealt with that. Because I kept thinking in this movie, just being the massive, I don't know, realist or cynic I am, like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. None of it happened like it was supposed to happen. And I love that. All right. Best character.
Tough one. I think a nice, I mean, other than Kitty, because I just love her weird little personality. I think that the cousin of
Madeline Arthur, Chris,
the popular girl's cousin, yeah, is also Laura Jean's best friend. And she's great. I loved her character. She's not in it a ton, but she always makes these decisions that are supportive of Laura Jean, but in the most loving way. And what I mean by that is that she encourages her to be better or make better decisions. She doesn't just do the easy, I'm your best friend, I'm going to say yes because I'm your best friend. She tells her that she has to go on the ski trip and she's going with her to make it happen. So I just really enjoy her character, or how she comes up and gets her back on the boots that Laura Jean bought on Etsy.
Yeah. She was cool. And she never once complained when Laura Jean started dating Peter. She was never like, oh, you're too cool for me now. Like, she just does her own thing. Like, that's another thing that didn't happen in this movie.
I also love that aspect of her personality because she clearly has this whole other life, too. She comes to the ski trip on the bus early in the morning, and she's been at a rave all night that she was posting about on her Snapchat. I mean, she's got a life, and I think it's hilarious that this character has this complete other facet, and her and Laura Jean are not exactly the same type of person, but they're still best friends.
And I like that Laura Jean isn't, she's just kind of a loner. She's not the unpopular kid. She just kind of does her own thing, which I like.
Yeah, she's a nice kid. She's just a person at the school. She's not in a set group, it feels like.
All right, my favorite character, it's got to be Peter, because I was like expecting him just to become the jerk jock kid, but then he just turned out to be a nice kid. I'm like, what's happening here?
Yeah, all his dialogue is just, it's well delivered. He's a funny kid. He's charming, but he's not, I wouldn't call him your typical, you know, good-looking jock. He doesn't have that classic look. He's not like a Freddie Prinze Jr. He doesn't have the sort of model look. He's just a normal kid.
Yeah. Do you know the director, after that rap, she said, you have no idea what you're walking into here, but the performance you just gave us for 21 days is so spectacular, you'll get whatever you want to do. Be choosy and decide. She said that to him.
That's really nice.
Yeah, she said, I think he has all the potential in the world. All right, best food moment. So there's a scene right now. If you type in popcorn to all the boys I've loved before, there's a scene that kids are freaking out about. So it's Peter, Laura Jean, and Kitty. They're watching a movie.
It was cute.
And he starts pillow fighting with Kitty. But there's a scene where they're pillow fighting and he sees that there's popcorn. And he just takes the popcorn off the couch and puts it on the ground and then starts whapping her with a pillow. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, she put the popcorn down.
He's so responsible.
Yeah, it's like, but that was, an improv move on set that the director said. She's like, why are people freaking out about this? I don't know. But just type it in. Type in popcorn to all the boys I loved before. And there's just tweet after tweet after tweet after tweet. Like BuzzFeed. 700 tweets about him taking the popcorn off the couch. Like,
adorable and responsible. What more could a high school girl want?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's
a Laura
like
Jean, if you...
Like,
especially.
I mean, it's a heads-up move to take the popcorn down.
Yeah, but if you think about it, that's exactly a Laura Jean move. So it makes sense that she would be into that guy.
And then also there's that scene where he's at the diner and he looks at the woman's name tag and he's like, what's your name?
Oh,
like,
I love that part.
Yeah, like this kid is like, he's a good kid.
He calls her by her name. Yeah. He's like, thank you, Marge.
Yeah. So, I mean.
And Laura Jean even looks impressed by that.
So I'm giving Peter and his popcorn skills a prop. So that's two popcorns for me. That's Zoe Deutsch shoving her face in the popcorn.
Should be your new rating system.
How much popcorn?
I give it 3 popcorns.
Just shoveling their face in the popcorn. And then he moved the pop. This is a theme. I feel like I'm obsessed with popcorn in cinema. So what's your favorite food moment?
I think the scene where Kitty gets a video call from her sister up at college and she has to bake cupcakes for Kitty for school. And the older sister does her typical, I mean, she's been obviously acting as the mom for the past few years since the mom passed away. And she's telling her, well, why are you doing the cupcakes that way? You should do it this way and do this, this, and this. And Laura Jean, also trying to avoid the subject of boys, quickly hangs up on her. And then Peter arrives as she's making the cupcakes, and there's a very cute scene that ensues there.
Well, because he's like, you should do something you can cut into squares. Cupcakes won't work.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, yeah.
He said exactly what the sister said.
He knows. And then the dad comes in and is like, oh, good. You're going to leave the house. You're going to go out. That's great. You need to go with him. And she's like, no, I can't. I have to make cupcakes.
Yeah, that was a good scene. I was going to add that, but I was like, well, what actual food was there? And then the popcorn. Seriously, guys, type in popcorn to all the boys I've loved before. It's crazy. People are going nuts over this popcorn. So while you're doing that, while you're researching the popcorn, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Crazy Rich Asians. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I like popcorn. What about you, Megan?
I can do popcorn. Yeah. I like it more in the context of the movies, though. I don't really do it outside of that.
When was the last time? Well, no, we did popcorn at Dragon Con.
That's true. But I was really hungry and it was very stale.
And then we did popcorn at the Braves game.
Again, filler.
Yeah, you're right. It's good filler.
It was really chewy at the Braves game.
Yeah, I still ate it all. If it's in front of me. We took a picture at the Braves game and everyone's smiling and there's me with my hand in the popcorn bag. Look like I'm a snake. It's like, ugh. All right, so, Megan. We're about to talk about...
Here We Go Again.
The most joyous movie of 2018. A movie that, if someone took a picture of me in the movie theater, I would just look so goofy because I have the biggest smile on my face. I don't think... There's scenes in this movie that made me smile bigger than any other movie this year.
You look like an ad for a dentist office.
Yeah. So hands down, like this movie, you're like, oh my gosh.
I think I said this to you after we left the movie, went to the bathrooms, and I heard people talking about it. Very often when you leave a movie, you hear people going, I liked this. I didn't like this. Oh, why didn't this happen? There's some sort of complaint that they make or, oh, it was okay. That kind of stuff. People were just, I mean, all the way into the bathrooms and out into the lobby, they were happy.
Yeah, everyone
was happy.
They were
just smiling and talking about how much they loved it. And I can't say the last time that's happened to me after a movie.
And I'm very happy that it's a movie. I mean, it's actually, you know, the original Mamma Mia, it only had like a 55% Rotten Tomato rating, but it made $650 million worldwide. So critics be darned. But we watch it again. I think Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is a better movie. The first one played like a stage play. It kept the, like... You know, in theater, you have to, the back rows have to see you. You don't have to do that in cinema. But like Mamma Mia, the first one was like full on.
Oh, it was like full blown color. There were crazy dance scenes with tons of people.
But the performances were almost like over the top.
Oh, yeah.
Big.
They were almost magical realism.
Yeah, it was, I don't know.
Fantasy?
Have you ever seen a musical where people are that loud? Like, performance-wise. Like, where they're just... Like, Meryl Streep.
The Lion King.
Meryl Streep... Well, that's a movie. Wait.
No, the musical.
Oh, gosh. They put... Meryl Streep put 700% into the first Mamma Mia. Like, she was... It was a big performance.
She put so much in, they couldn't fit her in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I really respect her for Mamma Mia, but watching the second one, I think it's a better movie.
I do, too. It's got more of a cinematic feel. It's a little bit glossier. All of the dance and song scenes, they're just very... Almost Moulin Rouge-like. I mean, they're colorful and loud and coordinated and just over the top. And at first, it kind of hits you by surprise. You're going, oh, we're doing this. Okay. And then you're like, yeah, we're doing this.
And the director is Ole Parker. He's the guy who wrote The Exotic Marigold Hotel. And also, so this is a random story. He got a call from Richard Curtis, the guy who wrote Love Actually, About Time, The Boat That Rocks, some very good... Notting Hill. He's written some very good things. He called up Al Parker. He's like, hey, do you want to work on Mamma Mia 2? And the guy's like, yeah, sure, I'll write it. And I'm like, no, we want you to direct it. He's like, I'll write it. I'm like, no, we want you to direct it. He's like, I'll write it. I'm like, no, you're going to direct it. So this guy ends up directing. And you know what's crazy? When he wrote this movie, he's like, we need Cher. I'm like, well, what if we can't get Cher? He's like, I don't care. We're getting Cher. And she was flip-flopping on it because she was terrified to be in it. There's an interview. Her manager called her up and was like, you're going to be in Mamma Mia 2. And she's like, okay, when do I show up? So, but she was terrified. So it wasn't her being a diva. She was just worried about...
Which is awesome because now we're getting an ABBA album out of her.
She was terrified to be on this movie, which is crazy to think that Cher was terrified.
She was fabulous.
Yeah, she shows up and just rocks it. But so I guess this movie... You know, Richard Curtis's daughter came up with the idea. She's like, just make it the Godfather 2 of Mamma Mia movies. Which means, so the first Godfather, you had Marlon Brando's performance as Vito Corleone or Don Corleone. But then you go back in time to see Brando as De Niro. And then you flash, and then you have scenes with Pacino, but then you have a flashback of De Niro who becomes Brando. So this one is where Siegfried is... She's
Donna's daughter.
Donna's daughter, Amanda Seyfried. So she's moved on. She's still with Sky, Dominic Cooper. And then there's a whole other section of the film where Lily James plays young Meryl Streep. So De Niro played young Brando. Lily James plays young Meryl Streep, which is kind of crazy that they ripped off Godfather 2 and they fully admit it, which I love. But it's perfect. Like, because I don't like, you know, I read something very cool. The director, he just wanted Lily James. So they tested tons of actresses, and they're like, there's some great actresses. And he was like, he was just tapping his watch, waiting for Lily James, because Baby Driver became a huge hit, and so they weren't expecting it to be so big. So she was going to come back for auditions sooner. But since it hit so big, her promotion of the movie expanded. So he had to wait a long time to get her back to audition. And so he was testing all these great actresses. He's like, just bring back Lily. Just bring back Lily. Like, I love Lily. So the whole time he wanted her for this role.
And she did a bunch of press recently for Guernsey when all of this was getting press too. So that probably took a chunk out of her schedule.
Yeah, she's promoting a lot of stuff. She's been in some big hits lately.
You know, I read an article where they had interviewed her and she said her agents didn't want to pitch it to her at first because they just didn't think it was her style. I don't know what she meant by that. Maybe it's not as serious or it's not really as much of a period piece as she's been doing, but she was like, you've got me all wrong. I need to be in this movie.
Yeah, put me in this movie.
And I love it.
And it pays off. I mean, when you first meet her, she sings ABBA's I Kissed the Teacher. She has a good voice, but like, I know I've said this to you before, like she has one of the most likable screen presences around. When she's on screen, you're just like, I like this person.
Oh, I'm an unapologetic Lily James fangirl right up there with Felicity Jones.
All right, I'm going to say this real quick. In the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, she does Glenn Powell dirty.
She does. And again, he is so likable, but he redeems it. I think he does a great job. She burns him pretty bad, but he comes back and he steals that scene.
Yeah. So there's this movie called The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society on Netflix. Very much so worth a watch. It's like a romance drama. And Glenn Powell from Set It Up plays the Baxter in it. And the Baxter is basically the guy who's with the girl until she meets another guy. But I got annoyed watching that movie. I'm like, this is crap. Like, why is she digging on Glenn Powell?
You got so annoyed about it. But what really sold it for me was how well Glenn Powell pulled it off. He got mad. He left. He came back and he was like, I love you.
Yeah, he kissed her on the head.
And he said goodbye.
Yeah, he gave her a nice little kiss on the head.
That's an awesome moment.
You haven't seen me that animated since Serendipity.
You were angry when that movie was over.
In Serendipity, I'm like, is John Cusack and came back and said, are they going to do it?
Come on. Dario Naharis, also our favorite guy from Orphan Black, was the guy she ends up with. What's not to like about that?
He's a big wimp in that movie. He's just all...
Well, yeah, he is, but we like his other screen presences.
All right,
go watch Orphan Black.
Mamma Mia. So you have two stories. You have Amanda Seyfried. Sky is somewhere else. He's learning how to run a resort.
New York.
And Seyfried, the character's name, she is... Sophie has turned... The resort from Mamma Mia into a beautiful resort.
It's amazing.
A beautiful thing with state-of-the-art everything. She's having an opening party, but only Pierce Brosnan can make it. And it turns out Pierce Brosnan and Meryl Streep got married. Oh, they got married in the first one.
Yeah, and he was living there on the island with her.
And then, but Meryl Streep passes away. And we never learn how or why or when.
No, I think it was a year ago.
Yeah, and so, a year ago, they get the thing open. And the problem is that Harry, played by Colin Firth, and Bill, played by Stellan Skarsgård, can't make it. So she's just there with Pierce Brosnan. And she's also there with the amazing Julie Waters, Rosie, and Tanya, played by Christine Baranski. They're back from the first one. So
and her wonderful new hotel manager.
Oh, yeah. Fernando, played by Andy Garcia.
Sin Fuegos.
So there's an article about Andy Garcia where they're like on Vulture. They're just they're talking about the Summer of Thurston for Andy Garcia.
because there's another movie out.
Yeah,
right?
Book Club, where Diane Keaton's like Andy Garcia. And then this one, spoiler, Cher's like Andy Garcia. So why are they talking like that?
He's so smooth. I mean, even in the Ocean's movies, he's sort of the bad guy and you love him.
Yeah, so so he's there, they're getting this thing open, and then we cut back to flashbacks of young Lily James meeting young Harry, young Sam, and young Bill.
So basically, they're playing out all of the diary entries from the first movie that Sophie was reading as she was preparing to get married. So she found Donna's diary, wanted to know who her dad was, found out about these three guys, and they play out all the different scenes from the diary, which is kind of fun.
And I think my favorite of the three has to be young Harry, played by Hugh Skinner, who is Colin Firth's little guy. And it's a big change from his original character from the flashbacks that we showed in Mamma Mia.
He's supposed to be a rocker?
Yeah, he was like a rocker. But in this one, he's just like a total young Colin Firth, overly nerdy guy. But he has the best voice of the three guys.
I think he was in some legitimate musicals.
Yeah, the dude can belt it out.
When I looked at his IMDb.
And there's a scene where they're both leaving the next day. And he's like, hey, we should hook up. And then there's a whole thing where
his whole thing was, we should hook up because I've never been with anyone. Yeah. It wasn't a very innocent...
And then he seals a deal with Waterloo. Inside a restaurant.
That is a funny scene.
You know, you watch these movies, and I know we've talked about this before, and this is a bit of an aside, but Paul Thomas Anderson, one of the best directors on the planet, Phantom Thread, Magnolia, all those movies, he was talking about Tiffany Haddish and Girls Trip, where he's like, I don't know how she kept the energy up, take after take, because we've seen her act, so we know that's not her normal style in that. But if you watch Girls Trip, Tiffany Haddish is just... on 24/7, probably 20 takes, 14 hours a day, just on. And you're watching this movie and you wonder how these actors, like, there's scenes and there's a song where they're singing to Dancing Queen, probably in 100 degree heat, every problem that could arise. And
save it for the questions.
Yeah, but the energy that, like, Lily James and, well, let's just say Hugh Skinner can keep up on this Waterloo, because you know it's take after take after take after take. And they're just such good actors and performers, and the energy that they're able to keep up. Like, I know this sounds weird, but to be so likable, you have to be good. So, I mean, there's good actors performing very well choreographed dance numbers and song numbers.
I mean, I would say that Lily James is, I mean, she's just impressive in this movie. Her energy level is unbelievable. Now, everybody, honestly, looks like they're having a fantastic time. They look like they're having so much fun. It's unrealistic. And I want to go. I know it's supposed to be Greece, but they filmed it in Croatia. I want to go there now.
Yeah.
I want to stay at this resort. I want to hang out with these people. They're the nicest, most fun. But why she's so impressive is that if you listen to the soundtrack or see the movie, you realize Lily James probably has the most screen time of anybody in the movie. She's singing and doing these big choreographed numbers. I mean, that takes a lot of work, and she's just on the whole time. It's so much fun to watch.
And it's kind of a tough job. Remember we were talking about Zoe Deutsch and Everybody Wants Some, how it's a movie about all these dudes for the longest time, then she pops up and takes a big chunk of screen time, and no one seemed to mind. Like, she got big laughs. So people go into this movie going, you know, these are my favorite characters. Where's Chloe? Where's Sky? Or where's Sophie? Where's Sky? Where are my favorite characters? And it's mostly Lily James. But there's been no complaints. And the audience scores, critic scores, and audiences are loving it. So she walked into it. She had to fill in for Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, she had an audience. How much money did Cinderella make?
Yeah, like $700 million. Baby Driver.
Who hasn't watched Downton Abbey?
Yeah.
And loved her as Rose? So I think she's got this quiet following. Not everyone necessarily knows her name, but they probably know her face.
Yeah. And she was just good. I mean, like, and you want to hear something awesome?
Yes.
The guy who shot this movie is Robert D. Yeoman, and he is Wes Anderson's cinematographer. Oh. Ever since Bottle Rocket, 90s.
Well, the dance scenes all do have this kind of candy-coated, I don't know, fun flavor to them, which makes sense if he's Wes Anderson cinematographer.
And he also shoots for Paul Feig. So he's done all of his movies. Bridesmaids, Spy.
Ooh, what about a
Ghostbusters. I don't know. I should look that up. I didn't get that. But so he works for the same people over and over. But you think about it. Paul Feig kind of has that rom-com type vibe, not Ghostbusters spy, but he has like a comedy type vibe, big over the top. And then you combine, I mean, everything that Wes Anderson does is meticulous. So if you're, I don't think any other cinematographer would want to work for Wes Anderson because you're basically just doing everything he wants. But when you watch a Wes Anderson movie, just the tracking shots, the way that he's able to capture light. I mean, look at Life Aquatic. So there's this scene on this, there's a scene where young Harry, who's, or young Sam, played by Jeremy Irvine, who's Pierce Brosnan, is taking photos of Lily James on this boat.
Oh, on the boat in the water.
Yeah, but the way they filmed it and the way they lit it, like they hit that beautifully. Like that's a great shot. So I like that Mamma Mia brings in Richard Curtis, the guy responsible for, you know, Love Actually, Love or Hate It, About Time, You Better Love It. Because Bill Nye is amazing.
Oh my gosh, go watch About Time. It'll break you.
So you have very good writers.
In the best way.
And then you have a very, very good cinematographer. And you have ABBA music. So this movie, it's not a cash grab. They legit wrote a good script that's based on Godfather 2. Brought in a great cinematographer. I know we say great a lot, but I love Wes Anderson's look of his film. So a very good cinematographer. This movie's not like a cash grab. This is a very well choreographed, acted movie.
No, that's very interesting about the cinematographer. Thanks for finding that one. I would say the only other movie that's ever come recently close to looking like a Wes Anderson would probably be Paddington 2.
Oh, yeah.
It has a lot of the same styles to it, the same looks, but that's besides the point.
They wanted to be. So, and then one more quote by the director. He wrote, "To me, one of the keys of casting a younger cast was casting people I really liked. Because good. I can attest to having seen the first film and seeing that the cast really unite," which they did. I mean, they're all in it together. And, I mean, Siegfried and Dominic Cooper sort of a four-year relationship after that movie.
Yeah, they're not just, like, one-shots of people having fun. It's big groups of people having fun.
He's like, and I wanted that with this younger cast as well. And you can just see, there's a bit at the end to Super Trooper where everybody gets together. And I know they're actors, so they have to attest to being, they have to pretend to be happy. But everyone loved life.
It looks like they're having real fun.
I mean, obviously they're acting, but you just watch it and you're like, these people love life right now. So yeah, it's just a good, charming, fun movie.
Every time you say the name of a song, I almost want to break out into song, and it's very hard for me.
You should get the soundtrack. Whoever's listening, buy the soundtrack right now.
I have an answer to the first question.
Let's do it. What makes it a unique take on the rom-com formula?
Okay. So this for me, and I thought about this as we watched the first one again, and I listened to all the songs over and over, and it just reminds you of the parts of the movie. I don't like it when people throw this term around too loosely, but it's a very progressive, maybe not feminist, but it's a very progressive take on women. I mean, if you think about it, in the first movie, Sophie feels pressured in getting married and having this traditional wedding that her mother never had, and then just doesn't do it. And she's been with Skye ever since then, so it's been about 10 years in the real world. They never got married. They're still getting together. I don't think it's a surprise. It was in some of the trailers that she's going to have a baby. She has a baby, and she isn't married, but they're happy together. The whole story is about Donna's wild summer of promiscuity, and there's zero judgment. Her friends are bought into it. Christine Baranski is super free with her sexuality. And there's absolutely no judgment. Everybody just loves it. They're having a good time. And that is so freeing in a movie. As a woman, to not have to think, oh, they're doing something sexy and people are going to judge her. Or, oh, she has to look sexy. It just has this really free attitude to it that you don't see in other movies. And I love that about it.
What did Baranski say to my ever-beating...
Something about her vagina, like really wanting to be with, I think it was Sam when he walked back down the
steps. She walks up to a guy and she's like, I'm not gonna lie, I like your face. Doesn't she say something like
that? Oh, that's when Sam comes back looking for Donna. Yeah.
And then
and he completely ignores her.
I love what you do. You think set it up and to all the boys, do they do that, or is this more?
I think they're more realistic to the way people act now, but they don't have this completely... I just noticed how free it is in its lack of judgment of women and doing whatever they want to do. And I just, I don't know. I sit and I think about that, and it's just so fascinating because how often do you see that in movies?
Got it.
And Sophie wears these outfits that aren't super sexy. She wears overalls. They always look cute and they're pretty and they're actresses, but they're not wearing skimpy clothes just to be skimpy. They're wearing what's comfortable or what works on an island. And it just feels so progressive to me.
Yeah. And this one, you got Fernando all dressed up. You have Andy Garcia looking good everywhere. Yeah,
with his hair and his hats and his, you know, his little popped collars.
All right. So for me, what makes it great? Our second question is, it's just pure joy. It's just, when's the last time we watched a movie that put a smile on our face like this? I mean, that's a tough question to ask.
To All the Boys.
Yeah, no. But, like, what's a movie, though? Like, what's a movie that just made us smile, like, walking out of the theater happy? I can't think of the last time I've felt this way about a movie.
I mean, this feels like cheating, but Crazy Rich Asians, although that takes so much more serious turns in it, and I did end up feeling very happy as I watched that, and I was grabbing your arm and smacking you a lot because I was so happy and excited, but this one is joy through and through. That one, it's, you know, it's got its ups and downs of the dramatic arc and whatnot, but I think for me what makes this so great is the musical numbers. They're just so fun. I mean, Lily is jumping into this choreography and they're running all over cities in London and Greece and they're in bars and that crazy guy who does
I can't remember the words of the song. What song is that?
Well, now I can't remember because I've been put on the spot.
What is it? Okay.
Wait. Oh, Kisses of Fire.
Kisses of Fire.
Burning, he is fantastic. Burning. Just the enthusiasm they put into their musical numbers. I really don't think it would work if they didn't have that enthusiasm. And they just really sell it. It's just so much fun. And you, honestly, how long ago did we see this? Several weeks?
Yeah, several weeks ago.
Over a month?
Yeah.
I've been listening to the soundtrack for that long.
No, yeah, no, songs that I was tired of I like now because I've been listening to that soundtrack so much. Like, I'm not sick of them anymore.
Why did it have to be me?
Oh, that's a good song. So, I do think, I like, Siegfried has a nicer sounding voice, but Lily has a better voice. Does that make sense? Amanda just has a nice voice, like it's pleasant.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen Les Mis and I really want to go see it now.
Yeah, we should do it.
I keep hearing her sing, and now I want to go see the movie.
Hathaway won an Oscar for it. We should check it out. All right, so best moment. You gotta let me do it. You gotta let me say the best moment because I think this might be yours, but I'm gonna steal it.
Oh, there's so many. I can think of another one.
Colin. All right, so Colin Firth and
no, that's not my
Colin
moment.
Firth and Stellan Skarsgård on the way to the island, and they find all these fishermen to take all these boats because all these boats have been canceled.
Oh my gosh!
So there's this massive thing of boats coming to this hotel opening, and it's Dancing Queen, and Siegfried and them run her and Brosnan and all them run. Brosnan hurt his back on this movie, you know that, and he was having a hard time. They're like, are you all right? He's like, I'm fine. So this entire movie, Brosnan's back was shot and he's diving all over the place.
I have no idea.
You know, what a great, but so there's a
Wait,
scene
but
where
what's funny is this joyous scene is preceded by Harry doing this super serious, I need to think and solve a problem, and he ties his hands behind a chair and he can't get out, and then he falls in the water and Skye finds him. It's very serious and dorky.
Yeah, one of the most random things. Yeah, I love, yeah. So, but you cut, and it's Colin Farrell and Stellan Skarsgård reenacting the Titanic scene.
So happy.
Before Titanic. No, is this modern time?
It's modern.
So they're reenacting the Titanic scene, so it's Colin Firth up front being the Kate Winslet, and Stellan Skarsgård in the back being the Leo. And that's just something I never thought I'd see in my life, is Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård reenacting the scene from Titanic.
And then they're just dancing very 70s style moves on the upper deck of boats.
While they're doing, you know, they obviously have helicopters doing laps around the boats filming it. And when you're seeing this, all the actors, you know, all the dancers are going crazy dancing. But in just a random helicopter shot with Stellan Skarsgård and Colin Firth in the background, they're dancing it up. So they're dancing just during random helicopter shots. Which I loved. So that's my best moment.
Okay. My best moment is when we find out what Bill is up to and why he can't make it to the party on the island for the opening. And this just killed me because I was sitting there so confused at first. They called it some award he's accepting for being the best Swede ever. And it's this reception, and he's up there at the podium, and you're getting a fat Stellan Skarsgård. And I was super confused.
He's in a fat suit.
And I'm looking at Mark going, what's happening? Why is he, what is this? And you realize he's telling these stories, and they pan over to the table with his family, and there's a phone on the table that says Bill. And he's in this car on the way to the airport to go to the island, and his twin brother is up on the stage accepting his award because family is more important, which is a little bit funny and ironic. He's saying Sophie is more important than his parents and his brother.
But, no, but his brother's helping him. So his brother, right?
It's all just funny, yeah. Though, because... he's telling his mom, thank you for doing this. And she's like, well, you know, when he used to copy each other's papers or stand in for homework, that was one thing. But this is too much, Bill. And he goes, just don't let him tell the goat story. And they show his brother up on stage going, I know this really funny story. It's about a goat. I want to hear the goat story. Yeah,
it's just it's like a very random scene in a movie that you wouldn't expect. Just two Stellan Skarsgård and then like a whole bit about a goat. Don't let him tell the goat story. That reminds me of a story. It's about a goat. And his name is Kurt. And the next question, he's my favorite character. The best character is Kurt.
Welcome for the setup.
Yeah, Kurt is just such a nice guy. He fills in for his family first. He's filling in for his brother. Isn't that his niece then? Isn't young Sophie his niece?
Yeah, technically.
So, has she met Kurt?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a long 10 years. She's got to leave the island at some point, right?
Yeah, they went traveling the world. But I just like that Kurt gets his brother's back and then tells a goat story. And there's a bit about that in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. So, he's my favorite character. Who's your best character?
There are so many people I love in this movie. I want to give a shout out to Julie Walters just because I love her. And she's fantastic. And she's so funny in the first one when she's crawling across a roof chasing Bill. But I'd have to say in this movie, my favorite character is the customs agent.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy.
At the dock by the ferry. And he's just so judgmental of the young men when they're chasing after Donna. And he tells them that their hair looked better.
Yeah, it looked better long.
Yeah, it looked better long. He's very judgy of people's passport photos. He would hate mine because I hate it. But when older Harry and older Bill come to go to the island and they miss the ferry, he's looking at their passports and he looks at, who is it, Bill's? And he's saying, time has not been good to you, my friend. Your face is crumpled and you're not looking so good and the hair looks better long and all these things. And then Harry arrives and he's sitting there in awe of Harry. He's like, time has been good to you, my friend, like fine wine or the mighty oak tree. And he just goes on, and it's so funny.
Like a cheese.
This customs agent, I mean, he's putting his time there.
I mean, Firth has stayed with it. He actually looks better than when he did in the first Mamma Mia. The first Mamma Mia, he looks better now than he does then. It's probably because of Kingsman.
Yeah, he's gotten very slim and kind of...
He's svelte. Mm-hmm. No, he wasn't as svelte back in the day. But, I think we picked two good ones. The dude at the dock, and then we picked the brother. They need a comedy together, the two of them.
Yeah, that would be good.
They need their own movie. All right, so last but not least, best food moment. And it's got to be the cake. There's a scene where young Julie Waters and...
Rosie and Tanya.
Yeah, so they're at the island. They're there for Lily James because her heart's broken. And young Pierce Brosnan comes back. And, oh no.
Well, first it's young Rosie pining after Bill.
Young Skarsgård. And then that young Skarsgård, of course, wants Lily James. So then...
she's sad and she doesn't have a boyfriend, she eats cake.
Yeah, and then...
And Tanya dismisses her instantly, saying, you know, oh, she's, you know, tall and skinny and pretty and she doesn't need cake. But when she gets dismissed by young Sam...
Yep, let's go eat cake. It's a good bit.
My favorite part is the callback to that later in the movie when the older version of them is at the resort and... Julie Walters, Rosie, is still pining after Bill. She wants to get back with him. And they sing Angel Eyes and, you know, you shouldn't get caught up in his lies and he's all of his deception and whatnot. And she gets depressed about it and she starts eating cake at the resort.
To a callback.
It's a fun one.
It just makes me think of young Christine Baranski going, you know, like, I like your face or something. I'm not going to lie. I like your face. I know they have names, but I like young Christine Baranski better because they really look like each other.
No, they really... I mean, they did a great job with her. I don't...
Lily James kind of pulled off that nice hair of Meryl Streep. And then so Sophie, Siegfried, they all look like they have the same kind of hair.
Yeah, you don't really see it when they're all separate, especially until the end when they're doing the Super Troopers number, where it's just, it's during the credits, so it's not part of the movie. And you've got Meryl singing and Lily, and you've got Amanda all together. They look like they could be part of the same family.
They should make it happen. They should just, Meryl should just adopt them and make her like her family.
That would be adorable. I would want them to sing all the time. All
right. Last but not least, crazy rich Asians.
I saw the trailer for this movie a good, I don't know, what was it, 4 months ago? And I've been so excited for this to come out.
6 months ago, you're like, we're watching it, Mark. We bought advance tickets. We went and watched it on the Thursday night before it opened, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I guess
that's the night it opened. And it was
packed. Yeah, packed theater. A good thing did we buy tickets in advance?
Yeah, we did. We bought them, I think we bought them maybe 2 weeks in advance.
Now, this movie, directed by John M. Chu, written by Peter Chiari and Adele Lim, based on a book by Kevin Kwan. I actually like this John M. Chu. He did a lot of like the Step Up movies. He did like a Justin Bieber movie. He did G.I. Joe Retaliation. But I've always thought he was a really good director, and I think he nailed the living daylights out of this movie. And he actually kind of talked about making this movie, and he actually, you know, he grew up in America. His parents worked really hard, so he didn't have to work in the restaurant. He was able to pursue film. And he was like, yeah, he's like, when I went to Taiwan for the first time, everyone was friendly to him, but then sometimes they're like, oh, you're just an American. So he felt the vibe that the kid, like Rachel Chu in this, felt. So he kind of knew that. But also when he lived in L.A., he kept his head down. He didn't want to be, like, he said this in an interview. He's like, I just didn't want to be, like, the Asian guy, like, in the room. Like, oh, here he is. But then he was also talking about how, you know, with his Chinese background, his family went and watched Joy Luck Club. And they went to a dim sum restaurant and discussed it for hours while scarfing down small plates. It was a magical moment. So this guy, you know, in 93, had these great memories of watching Joy Luck Club. He has he's been to Taiwan, he's been overseas, he's had that experience of saying, you know, you're an American. But then he's also this kind of director's kind of hasn't really embraced his heritage, because in America he had to like just keep his head down. So I thought between this and the script, it was like a perfect choice to direct this movie. And I think he handled it perfectly. And with his experience with lower budget films before the G.I. Joe movies, of course, and Now You See Me Too. But when he worked on Step It Up and all these movies, he had to really make these films for cheap. A lot of choreography, a lot of this, that, and the other. So I think he handled this movie perfectly, the director, John M. Chu. So what do you think?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for the background there. When you were saying the fish out of water thing, where he's the token Asian guy, or he was the American in a foreign country, that resonated to me. I was thinking in my work experience, I work in the tech industry and there's not a lot of females there typically. So you're not usually looked at as an expert in the room, or, you know, you just kind of have to keep your head down and do your job and work super hard. So that resonates.
And I don't know. He was just like, I think he said something. I was born to make this movie. Like, he knew it. And I thought it was really good. And I thought the way they cast this was really good too. I think what I liked most about this movie is a lot of these actors, aside from maybe Ken Jeong and the kid from Silicon Valley, I forget his name, Jimmy O Yang, I knew. But I didn't know a lot of the other actors, and I think that really helped create the characters for them. So it's not like watching Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz in a movie, because you know it's Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz.
Tom Cruising it up.
Yeah, exactly. This movie, you didn't know a lot of these actors, and so I was really like able to buy into their characters, and I kind of loved it. I don't know, I thought it was perfectly cast, and they had a lot of problems casting this movie too, because they looked at thousands of people, but they kind of, so the director said, we realize mainland Chinese actors can't necessarily do an English accent properly or understand the strife of an Asian American character. So it was really interesting that while casting this, they just couldn't find enough people to really load in the cast.
Huh.
Because there's just so few actors, but they had to have people who had a firm grasp of the English language. So casting this was a lot. They saw thousands of people to cast this movie.
Yeah, because a lot of these people have English accents.
Yeah.
I mean, British English accents.
Well, a lot of them went to school, right?
And they went to prep school.
Yeah, so like they were shipped away, and so they had like a very English, English, British.
Yeah, I was trying to differentiate between American English and a British accent.
There we go, British accent. Because they're all English. I've done that English before.
English speaking.
Yeah, American. They don't speak, yeah.
I would say my greatest disappointment in the casting of this movie that we have discussed before, we have been watching Into the Badlands, and we are completely caught up into half of season three, is that Daniel Wu is not in this movie.
I keep saying, why is Daniel Wu not here?
I'm very sad about that.
Yeah, let him beat some people up.
Can we petition for him to be in the second movie?
He should be. Let's just write it. Let's write the sequel. Let's put him in it.
I'll just write a letter to the director.
Never mind the book. Just be like, hey, we wrote a sequel to fit in Daniel Wu. It's called Crazy Rich Asians Fist Fight and Kicks.
Crazy Kung Fu.
No.
Crazy Rich Kung Fu?
Daniel Wu would be so pissed. He's like, guys, you know I was in movies.
Trying to do a mashup.
You know what I love? Daniel Wu was born, he was born in California.
Crazy Rich Badlands.
Ooh. And then he moves to China, and he had to have the dialogue spoken to him, right? Before each scene when he was in Hong Kong. That's pretty interesting. So he's a massive actor in Hong Kong, but he spoke English. And mm-hmm. he had to learn the language, Mandarin or, you know,
Cantonese,
that dialogue phonetically before he performed it. And then you get nominated for Academy Award. This is Daniel Wu hour that we're talking about here. But all right. So what I love about Crazy Rich Asians is someone made a great point. The main character, Rachel Chu, she's already established. She teaches game theory at NYU.
Economics professor.
Economics. Yeah, so she's already very successful. She's not just like the disheveled
person. She's not the assistant or the publicist or something.
Like a struggling cupcake shop owner. She's very successful and she's a teacher. Which happens. That happens. There's bakers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was Kristen Wiig's character in Bridesmaids.
And so I like that you establish this movie and she's already a very the youngest teacher, you know, to have a full-time spot. Very smart. Like, that's rare in these movies. She's not like, you know, a lot of these movies start with like McConaughey or other people. They have some problems. They're like man-child or they're divorced or they're widowed or they can't lie for 24 hours. She's just like a normal, cool person.
No, and I like that throughout the movie, they use that as a, like, oh, you should think this is impressive about her when they're introducing her to other characters. She is a professor at a big university in America, and she teaches economics, which is a very difficult field.
Yeah, and then her boyfriend, Nick Young, played by Henry Golding, they have a nice one-off where she'll get a cake, and then he'll eat the whole cake.
And then she orders another cake.
Yeah,
it's like because she likes her food, which I appreciate.
And that's like a really good, that's a good kind of scene that they had there.
I love me some cake.
Turns out, though, Megan, that Nick Young is the son of the
richest real estate moguls.
Yeah. In
Singapore,
which they moved there when it was all just swampland, not swampland, but when it was all just forests. So they're billionaires.
Well, they're way back ancestors.
Yeah. Old money. So they're incredibly rich. She doesn't know this because he didn't want to tell her. Which,
yeah, he was living this fantasy life.
Yeah, I guess that's still a trope, the lie that sets everything up.
True.
I mean, he sets her up pretty bad.
He does. He doesn't do her any favors in that at all. I mean, and he proceeds to not tell her as they're going over there.
And he has, I guess he's had kind of like a laissez-faire life, though. Just a billionaire floated through things.
Yeah, she does make some jokes about him playing basketball at the grossest Y in New York, but did they ever talk about what he does in New York?
I don't think so. He hasn't had school? He finished school and stayed around? Didn't he finish business school? They're very vague with it, but he's just had this chill life. Now he's been with Rachel Chu for about a year, and he decides to take her over to Singapore.
For his best friend's wedding.
For his best friend's wedding. And they go over there in probably the greatest flight ever. They pick him up from the cab and they're like, you're first class. And she's like, no, we're not first class. Like, we're second. Like, we're not doing that. Put him in the
most economy. I brought some snacks. My mom loves to cook for us.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. And then she asks him, she goes, are you super rich? He's like, we're comfortable. And she's like, that's something super rich people say. So they get to Singapore. Yeah. And they get to Singapore. Why am I questioning that? And they meet up with his best friend and his fiance. Araminta Lee, I guess her name was. And they go eat some delicious food, which is a scene that's just evil. Oh, yeah. I have a shellfish allergy and I couldn't eat any of it.
I know. I was a little bit horrified for you watching that scene, thinking we can never go to random markets in Asia because you might die.
I'll just stab myself with an EpiPen.
I have to bring like 10 EpiPens.
But the food looked incredible. I mean, we'll get to that later. But then the best part about this movie, though, is a very... What would you call this? So her best friend, one of her best friends is there, played by Awkwafina.
Yeah, she was, what, a roommate of hers in college?
But she's super rich, and her parents, Ken Jeong, which is pretty amazing.
But she's only moderately rich compared to the Youngs.
But they're still, like, you know, her moderate rich is a super rich. Like, their house is, like, based off, like, Donald Trump's bathroom, they said. This gold plated everything. And she drives around, what, a beautiful Audi?
Oh, yeah, she had a gorgeous car.
Yeah, I mean...
With three sets of changes of clothes in the trunk because... I'm not an animal.
Yeah. But that's like a very... I mean, it's a plot device.
I mean,
but
I'm lucky if I have a jacket in my trunk, if I'm cold.
Well, I had all that stuff, but I didn't have them nicely folded in my trunk. I just laid in my truck.
They're definitely not pressed. They're just scattered under seats.
Well, when you work... You know, when you... I had to have them. All right, so... I mean, it's a plot device, having her hair there. But basically, Awkwafina saves Rachel's butt many times. Because she has a good... a very rich friend to go hang out with. When the problems happen. But, so she gets there, she meets the family, and she meets the awesome, always good Michelle Yao, who plays Eleanor Young, who's like, I would just melt in front of her. She would just make me...
You just wither and crumble into dust.
She says the meanest stuff.
She would turn me into a vampire in the sun, and I would just fall apart.
Yeah, she just... Yeah, I would be like one of the Avengers from...
Too soon.
So... I don't know, but I guess the thing about this movie is it does follow all that where, you know, you meet the family's parents, the parents don't like you, but isn't that normally, you know what's interesting about that? Isn't that normally the woman brings the guy home and then the parents don't like the guy?
It's gone both ways.
Has it?
Oh, okay. I mean, Monster-in-Law is all about Jane Fonda hating Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, Vartan. Yeah, you're right. So she goes back, she meets him. But the whole thing, though, this movie, it only cost $30 million. But I guess there must have been massive tax breaks in Singapore because they shoot at beautiful hotels. Yeah. Some beautiful... There's a shot where...
the conversion rate must be fabulous.
There's a bachelor party and this guy rents a tanker off of... on international waters.
A freighter
and builds
with a bunch
pool
of containers.
And a DJ. But the crazy thing is that...
I'd be so pissed that my tchotchkes from overseas aren't here on time because he waylaid that ship.
I need my tchotchkes. So, but what the crazy thing is, though, the groom isn't into it. So he and Nick, they fly somewhere.
Steal a helicopter.
And of course they say, good thing my pilot's license came in handy. But they are chilling... on this floating dock in the most beautiful scenery you'd ever see. It's like that Bond movie with the man with the golden gun, that island. They're sitting on this beautiful dock drinking beer with this helicopter landed on this crazy spot. But just the vistas, the hotels, the food, the dresses. Like there's a full pretty woman scene where this really great guy, what was his name? Oliver? Yeah, Oliver. He's like the lesser rich
of
the family. Yeah, one of the cousins who takes care of everything for the family.
He's like their family fixer.
They do the full pretty woman get up scene that features Ken Jeong trying to push dresses onto Constance Wu. But just the opulence. And there's a 60 million dollar wedding? $40 million wedding? But only good Baptists would spend $20 million on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the wedding is something else, but...
Yeah, you got to see. I can't explain that. But all right, so let's jump into
this. It's a visual treat.
So what makes a unique take on the rom-com formula? There's so much to talk about with this movie. It's crazy.
It really is. I think probably more than anything is the fact that this movie has pulled a coup. Everyone keeps talking about... I've read so many articles complaining that it wasn't serious enough. It didn't have enough gravitas for the first all Eastern Asian cast in so many years. I think they pulled off a complete coup. They stuck a rom-com in front of us with a completely Asian cast and treated it like it was every other rom-com that was released.
I think, yeah.
It didn't have any main names. It didn't have a Sarah Jessica Parker or a Matthew McConaughey or a Jennifer Garner saying, you know, this is, or a Reese Witherspoon, this is the best new rom-com, come watch me be cute. It just casually dropped itself and said, I'm here and I'm a rom-com, accept me.
That seems almost more progressive to me from it where is. I'm sitting. Yeah,
it's so exciting, and the fact that there's been such a great response to it. Every week I get new articles in my feed just saying, this is what it's at this weekend. It's had another killer weekend. It's not dropping off in revenue from weekend. It's staying the same, which is nuts.
I think it had a weekend where it had like a 6% drop, which is unheard of for movies. I mean, some movies, they'll be released and they'll have like a 78. Solo had a 78% drop. This movie had a 6% drop, which is nuts.
If you think about it, it's still running. It's in September now, and it hasn't even been released in some major countries. It hasn't been released in the UK. They won't get it till November.
Oh, yeah. It'll clear 200 easy. I think it's already over 150. So, what makes it great?
Oof. What makes it great? I mean, just, I don't know. Everything about it.
Is it a great movie, or is it a great romantic comedy?
No, I think it was a great movie. I really, really enjoyed it. It just has so many facets. It has a big cast. I mean, that's the fact that maybe that's what makes it great. The fact that they're able to balance so many personalities in this movie and you're still bought into all these different storylines. That's great. That's great story writing.
There's a subplot devoted to Awkwafina's brother, who's this creepy guy that takes photos at the worst moment. Like, he's taking photos, and on any other movie, he would be creepy. But in this movie, he's endearing.
But what I love is the fact that Constance Wu's character just accepts it. And she's making jokes about it towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, that guy's not doing it to be weird. He just seems like he's a weirdo, but he's not doing it.
And then he's kind of smiling. And he's in on the joke, too. He knows it's weird, but he's still in on it.
Yeah, I love that part of this. So, what was your favorite moment in this movie?
You go first.
All right, so I know this sounds weird, but I love good cover songs. There's a great Elvis cover in here, but I really love the cover of Yellow by Coldplay in this during the wedding. And I love that the director wrote Coldplay a letter to get permission for it. Coldplay were all about it. But I just thought it was like a really beautiful scene. I love the song. I love the way everything was set up. And I mean, just like you said, it just felt like any other rom-com. It just felt like a really great romantic comedy moment. And I don't know, I just loved it. That song was on. I thought, like, I wouldn't mind, like, I'll Spotify the album. But I just loved hearing that cover. I loved how they were just taking these songs and just kind of putting their own spin on it. And the woman who did it, I think she interviewed for it. She wasn't like a big name. She just won a contest and was able to do it. I don't know, it was just a beautiful moment. And I love a good cover song in a movie. So that was my favorite, the cover of Yellow.
My favorite moments are, they're both along the same theme with Constance Wu, how the part where they go to the private island for the bachelorette party and some mean girls put fish guts all over her bed and call her, what, like a
money grubber or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, a gold digging tramp or something to that effect, which is horrifying. And in any other movie, the main character would do something super dramatic, or she'd have some big breakdown, or they'd play complete revenge fantasy on the whole thing. And, you know, those people would get in so much trouble. But she manages to play it quiet. And she just says, I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of freaking out about this. I'm just going to pretend like I'm okay with it and move on. And she grabs Nick's sister and they bury the damn fish in the beach. And they just kind of have a good moment together. It's just so low-key and it feels more realistic. If something shitty like that happened to you, you wouldn't go freak out. You wouldn't call some massive scene in real life. And you wouldn't have the time to have a complete breakdown because other people are depending on you to keep moving. So it's so much more real, and I really just went, wow, and appreciated that about it. I loved it. And then even when she gets back with Nick, she doesn't make a big deal about it. They're joking, and she's got some tears because obviously that was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, that was downright terrible what they did to her. But she just takes it so much more like a normal human being would than a rom-com human being would.
So these characters are human beings. They weren't caricature. Well, some of them, well,
in that moment, she was.
But some of them are so opulently rich. Like, who knows how they would act?
Well, she acts like a normal person.
Yeah, you're right. But like the rich people.
Which is great because she is the normal person in the movie.
Those rich people never felt fake to me, though. They just felt like very rich people. Just squirrely.
And the other thing on the same tone was how she handles Nick's mom at the end when they're playing Mahjong. And you just expect her to do something, I don't know, gangster or just be over the top about it. But she just is very quiet in the moment and says, this is how I feel and I'm moving on. And she's just a bigger person and I really like that.
She does a walk-on. She wins and does a walk-off though.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. But she earned it at that point. It wasn't over the top throughout.
All right. So who's your favorite character?
Ooh, who's my favorite character? They're all just so vibrant. I mean, I do love Awkwafina, but probably her dad, Ken Jeong. Oh, yeah. He just has the craziest lines when they're sitting at the dinner table and they look at Constance Wu and say, you need to eat your chicken nuggets. There are starving children in America. Do you want to be as skinny as her? And the kids just look at her and go, no.
I was laughing so hard. No one really laughed in that theater.
And when he was pushing the dresses on her and just trying to be a part of it, and he's like, could you give this to her? Because I think it would look good on her and she would like it. It's just, he's so funny and likable.
I got to go with Awkwafina, though, because my favorite moment in this, so I know this is a podcast, but our cat is just staring at us from outside the banister looking really creepy right now. I just have to say that. I'm not going to edit this out either. But yeah, so look at him. He's staring at us.
Ghost.
He's a creeper.
Hey, bud. He's trying to guilt you.
Yeah. All right. So it's Awkwafina, but there's a scene where she's driving Constance or Rachel to a party. And Nick is like, hey, Nick walks up to Awkwafina. He's like, hey, you want to come to the party? And Awkwafina's like, no, I can't. Nick's like, come on. Like, you want to come? She's like, no, I can't. I got something else to do. He's like, no, you're coming to the party.
Ate.
Yeah, I already ate. And he's like, come on. And then what does she say? I'm going to give her a second F-bomb. She's like, fuck yeah, I'm coming to the party.
Fuck yeah, I'm going to the party.
But I love how she's like, no, I already ate. No, I'm good. Ah, fuck yeah, I'm going to the party.
Oh, she put in her, like, two or three no's that are expected, and then she caved.
And then she goes into her trunk, and she has three different dresses to wear.
It was,
it's
like,
awesome.
Clubbing, Walk of Shame.
And something else.
Cocktail party.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. It's like it's just a funny moment, and she nails it. Like, and then the scene where she's talking about chickens are bitches. So we've been saying that lately. Like, chickens are bitches. Bok, bok, bitch. So I don't know. I just like her a lot. I feel like she was just a really cool character. What was your favorite food moment?
There's so much food in this movie.
So much food.
I don't know. This is a tough one. I mean, the dumpling scene, it's got a lot of meaning to it. But probably my favorite food scene is just the one where the four friends are sitting at that market. And they went to every single stall and got different things. And they're just gorging on all this street food. Because, I'm sorry, if you haven't noticed during this podcast, I love food. So I go to cities and I'd rather spend all my money on food than tchotchkes. And just go there and try all the things. When I was in Chicago, I stopped at the Nutella place and the candy store and the coffee place and the tea place. And just, I don't know, if there's an interesting, unique food in the donut place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about the food scene where they spend a good amount of time there circling the table with the cameras and showing the foods and their utensils right down in the food to show you what the food is.
There's so many good lagers they were drinking too. I wanted to have that beer. I wanted to have the food, but now I would have blown up and probably died. But it just looks so good. Yeah, that's got to be my favorite food scene of the year. I liked the dumplings a lot. I liked when she brought the food onto the plane. I liked when he ate her cake. I like the chicken nugget. There's a lot of good food scenes in this movie.
That opulent meal that they had at Awkwafina's house.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, this is just a small meal.
Yeah.
Didn't they bring her some really... You know what? That was another really nice
moment. The kids brought her food.
When Constance Wu was having her breakdown after the fallout with Nick's family, and she didn't want to get up for several days, she stayed at Awkwafina's house. And the little brothers and sisters brought her a tray of food, and they just left it for her. And it was just so sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, they just adopted her into this family. They were very grateful for, I guess, everything that she had done for Awkwafina during college.
Yeah. All right, so how would you rank these movies?
That's tough. I like them all. Can I give them all number one?
What about this? You pick your top four, and then I'll pick my top four, and then we'll add them up and see what wins.
This is so hard for me, because as we've rewatched some of them, as we talk about them right now, I love them all again.
What would you put one?
Okay, fine. I will put Mamma Mia's one.
Right.
Crazy Rich Asians is two. To All the Boys and then Set It Up, which is so unfair because Set It Up is great. They're just all so different.
All right, well, I'll do Set It Up, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Crazy Rich Asians, and Mamma Mia 2. And if we add up the points, so your Mamma Mia got, you know, whoever has the least amount of points wins. Your Mamma Mia had 1, but I gave it 4, so it's 5, right? Crazy Rich Asians, you put it 2, I put it at 3, so that's 5. Then you had To All the Boys I've Loved Before at number 3, I put it at number 2, so that's 5. And then you put Set It Up at number 4, which is 4 points, I put it at number 1, it's 5, so it's a tie. All four movies tied.
High fives.
That's right. So every movie is tied. All four of these movies have tied with 5 points each. Which I think, I couldn't pick a favorite. I'd say Mamma Mia. All right. How about this? Mamma Mia left me the happiest. Yeah. I laughed the
hardest. Oh, yeah. Give them each an award.
All right. Mamma Mia was pure joy. I was the happiest. My biggest laughs were in Crazy Rich Asians.
I would say the most awe moments were in To All the Boys.
And the most surprising moments. Like that kid, I thought he was going to be the jerk.
Yeah,
he
just kept, oh, it's, oh.
And the best chemistry goes to Zoe and Glenn.
Yeah.
No one definitely had better chemistry than they did. Those two were too
good.
Yeah,
you asked me a really horrible question as we were prepping for this. Who would I replace them with if I had the chance to pick people with as much chemistry? And I just got so mad at you because they're so perfect in these roles and I don't even want to think about other people with more chemistry. But I do have an answer.
What?
I would say Imogen Poots and anyone, or Imogen Poots and Aaron Paul, because they were fabulous together in Long Way Down and in
Need for Speed.
They've just got great chemistry. I think she could have chemistry with anyone, which is why her and Clint Powell might just blow up the universe.
Yeah, I think Imogen Poots and just somebody in a digital, and Jar Jar Binks.
Low blow.
No, they would be great together. Jar Jar would become popular because of Imogen doing all the heavy lifting. So I think Imogen, toss her into this. I'm down for that. So I think we're good on these movies. I had a good time talking about these. This was fun.
Let's go watch them again.
Let's do it. All right, so stay tuned for next week when we bring in another exciting episode. But for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Megan Hoffmeyer, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.
Bye.